Does anyone remember anything from the presentation I gave yesterday? Yes. What is the deep meaning of that? Yes, it is exactly what we're thinking of. It's specifically what we are desiring, because what we desire dictates how we think and what we think. Very, very important to keep our desires proper. There is an old saying that every desire is a prayer. And Krishna very, very kindly will fulfill our prayers. All of them. If he so desires. He is, of course, independent. So therefore, the conclusion was... Yes, that was the method, the methodology. The conclusion was that we should hear and chant Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam Vishnu. I can't. We should hear and chant about Krishna and remember Krishna, so that Krishna, thoughts about Krishna, affectionate, loving, attached thoughts about Krishna completely dye and color our consciousness. This is one of Prabhupada's great gifts in starting the Krishna consciousness movement, is that what the movement is so big and it has such an incredible mission. Prabhupada once told Jagatwini Mataji and myself, when we were sitting with him in the Philippines, in Manila, he said, "It is my desire to make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious." And then he said, "Please help me with that desire, fulfill that desire." So do you think within the scope of that desire to make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious, you can find a space, a position for you so you can do something to help Prabhupada in this? Everyone. It is such a big, big, all-consuming mission that everyone can find something to do and use anything. And this is specifically a gift. That everything, yuktavaragya, with detachment, everything, utility is the principle, that everything could be used in this mission. But please always remember that purity is the force. And without purity being the force, utility is the principle, becomes completely ruined. Because instead of using everything in Krishna's service, I take my percentage, at least a percentage. Maybe I'll give Krishna something, but I want to be the center, the enjoyer. So that mentality, it is in our interest not to maintain that mentality. It is in our interest to maintain a Krishna conscious, a Krishna centered, anya bilasita sunyam, ganakama anavrita. Anukulena Krishna Nashilanam, the Sarup Lakshana, the primary characteristic of pure devotional service, is a continuous cultivation of the attempt to please Krishna. And here, in the shelter of Giriraj, we are in the shelter of he who pleases Krishna in every way. Haridasa Vajo, Hantayan Adri Adasa, Haridasa Vajo. And those words, calling, glorifying Giriraj, who did they come from? From whose lotus mouth? The gopis, but Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, specific. Everyone says the gopis, but and it's true, but and it's in the Venu Gita, the 21st chapter of the 10th canto, the gopis are speaking. But Srila Raghunath Das Goswami specifically says those words came from the lotus mouth of Srimati Radharani herself. Glorifying Giriraj. So what association we are getting. So if you remember also, one of the the points that Prabhupada made in the lecture that we heard was that if we think that if we don't keep in our mind that Krishna is God, Sat Aishwarya Purna. What does that mean? Sat Aishwarya Purna. He's full. He has complete simultaneously. He possesses all. First one or one? Strength. He's unlimitedly strong, unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly beautiful. Try to conceive, even though it is impossible for us to conceive, of what unlimited beauty is. The world goes mad after a beautiful person. Female, male. So attractive. But that beauty is just the smallest bit of a drop that Krishna, due to that person's piety, has benedicted that male or female with some physical beauty. But that's a drop of the unlimited ocean of Krishna's beauty. Every part of Krishna's body is beautiful. From what is the most beautiful part of Krishna's body? Does anyone know? Badanam. Badanam is what? His sweet smile. It is compared to madhusmitam, excuse me. It is compared to madhugandhi. It is compared to the fragrance of honey. But we'll talk about this later. We won't go in that direction right now. But we should remember that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. He's unlimitedly powerful. He's unlimitedly wealthy. That means wealth is so much chased after in this world because wealth means power. And power is required to control, and control is required to enjoy. Without power, you cannot control, and without controlling, you cannot enjoy. Because everything happens what you don't want to happen. Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, wealthy, strong, renounced, beautiful, and all-knowing. He knows everything. All that it is that is can be known. He knows. Omniscient. So that all-powerful, supreme personality of Godhead, what does He do for His pleasure? This is a most intriguing question. He already he's made of Satchidananda Vigraha. Now, what does He do for His pleasure? What does the king who is so powerful do in the innermost section of His palace with His most trusted, dearest, loving friends and associates? The common people just simply have no idea what the king does. The common people, the common spiritualists, have no idea how Krishna actually gets His pleasure. And therefore their concept of Him, it is so full of awe and reverence. And it appears as if He gets His pleasure sitting on a throne. I once saw a little cartoon where God is sitting in front of His computer, and on the screen, He's got His finger just right about to press the enter button on the computer. And there's this poor fellow walking down the road. This is in the cartoon. And he's walking in front of a building. And from the building you see a rope. And from the rope you see a piano hanging. And the poor fellow is walking down the road, and he's about to walk right beneath the piano, and God's there with His finger on the enter button to press, okay, now's the time to drop the piano on his head. If he's the controller, that's why in Western theology, practically speaking, they can't, because they think that this is all there is to God, that he's the controller. They can't get beyond the question, does he really exist in such a world that is so full of horrible things? They never really get beyond that question. What to speak of entering into that supreme person's most intimate quarters, where he is enjoying, he manifests his full personality there. The fullest personality, all of himself he manifests. When the king is sitting on his throne, he has to be very grave. Every once in a while he makes a small joke. But he cannot manifest his whole nature, everything that he loves, what he likes to do. A little officially he can do that. But Krishna especially, or we could even say only in Vrindavan, it's a full, his activities are a full manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who he actually is in private. How he gets his pleasure. Very, very, very intimate. Very confidential. Should not be misused, this transcendental knowledge and information. What we will do now, Krishna willing, we will enter Krishna's, we are already sitting here, we were already entered, but we will hear something, because we must hear about Krishna. We will take a look at Krishna as he intimately acts with his cowherd boyfriends. This is described by Srila Sukadeva Goswami in the 12th chapter of the 10th canto. Does anyone know what that chapter is entitled? Or what is it about, the 12th chapter? Yes. Krishna, this is while after Krishna has left Gokul, and they're going to Nandagaon. They stop in at Chatikar, very close to Krishna Balaram Mandir. And Krishna, he's just very, very, very young at that time. He's manifesting his transcendental, eternal Satchitananda body. As if a 4 or 5 year old. And prior to that time, because Krishna is Rasaraj, his desire, because this point, people who are not aware of who Krishna is, they cannot understand what he does for pleasure. People think, again, he's there with his finger on the enter button. And people think that his pleasure is having all these little people, all of us, worshipping him and offering him prayers and fearing him. What kind of a person gets his pleasure out of that? Does he have some kind of a problem? He's the controller. He's the organizer of everything. And he's organized it so everyone has to pay their obeisances and pray to him. Does he have some kind of a lack in his consciousness that he needs that? And that's how he gets his pleasure? But Krishna is a person who's completely different from that. Krishna gets his pleasure from increasing the pleasure, the ecstasy of his loving devotees. He wants to increase everyone's ecstasy to the highest amount. The jiva soul, can, although tiny, can experience greater pleasure than Krishna himself. This is what Krishna wants to award to the living entities. More pleasure than he experiences. Pleasure that he wants to taste, and therefore to taste the pleasure of serving him, he comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is thinking, I want to taste that pleasure. I want to taste the pleasure that the foremost of the lovers of Krishna, Srimati Radharani, tastes. The pleasure of serving Krishna. He wants to award that which is greater than his own pleasure. This is Krishna. And if we want to understand the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, this is the main essential principle to understand, that whatever appears to be going on, all the devotees, they have one desire, and that is to please Krishna. They love him completely, fully. They are willing to do anything to give Krishna's pleasure. To do anything, to not do anything, to please Krishna. And Krishna himself, that personality who is Sat Aishwarya Purna, Aham Savasya Prabhavo Mattaksavam Pravartate, the one whom everything is coming from, Sutre Mani Ginai Va, everything, all of reality rests upon him as pearls are strung on a thread. His desire and his activities are just to increase the pleasure, the ecstasy of the devotees who love him. And this is what is going on in Vrindavan. It is just an exchanges of the highest, most unselfish form of love. Or that is actually, it is love with not the slightest tinge of lust. And therefore Srila Narottama Das Thakur has described prema bhakti, or the love of the devotees for Krishna, as more pure than gold that has been purified 100 times in fire. Each time a little bit of impurity is taken out, and a little more a second time, until it is 100% pure gold. Pure love of the most intimate kind. That is what's going on in Vrindavan, the exchange between Krishna and his devotees. Let us read something of this, but please, my dear devotees, please keep this in mind. This is the most extraordinary thing. What we will hear. And the devotees, or Krishna's associates, they are experiencing during these pastimes the most incredible, continuous, highest, sublime, pure ecstasy in variety. One different variety of ecstasy after another. So this is the 12th chapter. The beginning of this chapter describes Krishna, because Krishna and the cowherd boys, in Krishna's earliest years, the ecstasies are primarily exchanged with those in parental ras, his parents, Vatsalya ras. And at this time, Krishna's beginning, he's desiring to exchange ecstasy with his sakas, his friends. So Krishna, again and again, every day, asks Nanda Maharaj, please, we can take out the calves, because they're too young to take out the cows at this time, 4 or 5 years old. But we can take out the calves. We can take them out and graze. You won't have to worry about them anymore. The calves go out for a short time because they need more attention and from their mothers, so they can't go out too long. So, Father, please let it. No, my son, you are too young. You are too young. No, Father, we are old enough, we are strong, and we are all so intelligent. And indeed, Krishna is so intelligent, and he's unlimited. But to increase the ecstasies of Nandamaras, he's speaking like this, because what does Nandamaras? He's fearing, oh, my son, you are such a little boy. Due to the love, due to the Stai Bhava of Vatsalya Shuddha Prem, of parental love, if one has to read Nectar Devotion Bhaktarasamrita Sindhu carefully to understand, but it is based on one's Stai Bhav. Unless there is a basic love, then there is no rasa generated. There is no incredibly unlimited sweet taste generated unless it is based on a particular Stai Bhav or love. So because of that love, everything that Krishna does, every cute little thing Krishna does, turns Nanda Maharaj's heart in ecstasy. And different waves of ecstasy come up in the ocean of his loving heart. And finally, after every day hearing Krishna, please, please let us go out. And all the coward boys are saying yes, because they want Krishna, to be alone with Krishna. So that they can play, because boys always want to be away from their parents and go to play and do things. And boys always want to do that because in this world it's a reflection of what happens in Goloka Vrindavan. To churn the ecstasy of their sakaras. And Nanda Maharaj says, all right, Krishna. And Mother Yasoda says, all right, Krishna. But don't be... And tells this boy, you please take care of Krishna. And don't let him out of your sight for 1 minute. Balaram, you take care of Krishna. You keep him always... Yes, Mother. Mayi. Yes, Mayi. Yes. Boys, of course, will say anything so that they can... Yes, enough for one. They just want to be with Krishna continuously. So, Sukadeva Goswami describes in the first verse of this 12th chapter, O King, he's speaking to Maharaj Prickett, because this is taking place, that by the time the 10th canto is being read, Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Prickett only has 3 more days to live, approximately. And he wants to bring him to the point, Sukadeva, his Guru Maharaj, wants to bring him to the point of hearing the most ecstatic pastimes of Krishna, the activities of Krishna, because the activities of Krishna and Krishna are exactly the same. And when the speaker is right and the hearer is right, one can experience Krishna when hearing about Krishna. Hearing and hearing and hearing and hearing about Krishna until the heart becomes completely cleansed of everything but love for Krishna. So after herding the calves for many days, Sukadeva Goswami explains, one day Krishna decided to take his boyfriends for a picnic in the forest of Vrindavan. They wanted to go for a picnic. Raise your hand if you've ever been on a picnic with your friends or loved ones. Quite nice. Have you ever been on a picnic with your enemies and people that you don't like? No. And if you have been, it's torture having to make a fake smile for all day long. And then as soon as you're away from it, it's not the activity that brings pleasure. It's love. It's who you're with. It's the rasa. It's the relationships that bring pleasure. You can do the same thing with one group of people and it's torture. And the same thing with another group of people and all you do is think about how wonderful it is. So one day, Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. And having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made out of a horn. Because all the cowherd boys, they had certain things they would have to carry. Does anyone, the cow's horn, or the bull's horn, is one thing, and they would carry that on a rope. They would put a rope, and they would dress like this, and they would carry it over here. What else would they carry with them? Always. A stick. But with the calves, with the cows, they have a bigger stick where they, and you can see this today all over Braja. They have sticks with a with another stick at the end, so they hit the cows quite, sometimes quite firmly. But with the calves, just a little stick. That's all that's required, because the calves are so gentle and small. And what else do they have? They have a rope, because that's required sometimes. So, Krishna went out early, and he, using his bugle, he began to call all the cowherd boys to come. And Krishna, we know, we hear more about Krishna's playing his flute, how Krishna's flute is filled with the breath of Krishna, which is none different from Krishna, and it's ecstasy. And Krishna's bugle, same as the flute, it can call specific people. And the cowherd boys would always keep this with them. For what purpose? So that in case they had to make a loud sound when they're out in the forest and call their friends, or if calf was lost or something, they could call them. But when Krishna would play his bugle, he would come out and call each of the boys. He went to each of the boys' house early in the morning. And he would call them with his bugle. And he would call each and every one of them by name. Oh, Sudama, come now. Let us go. Wake up. Wake up. Come. Let us go to the forest. We're having a picnic today. And what do you think the boys were thinking? Because their whole life was only Krishna. Did they have to wake up? No. Because all night long they would be coming to Yasoda and Nanda Maharaja's house. Oh, Krishna, we're already late. Come, wake up. All night long they'd be coming. Krishna, Kanaya, Kanaya. Yes, Kanaya, come. And Mother Yasoda would come. Be quiet. Krishna's sleeping. Go home. Can't you see? It's still dark. But they couldn't see anything. They could only see and Krishna and feel separation from Krishna. We hear Mahaprabhu's mood of Ashleshava Padaratam Panastumam and Yugayutam Nameshena a yuga. Or a moment without Krishna. Namesha is a moment without Krishna. Seems like thousands of years, 12 years or more. That's one, Prabhupada originally translated a yuga as 12 years or more, because that's one of the meanings of yuga, 12 years. But one moment separation from Krishna is unlimitedly painful. Why? Just imagine how much love has to be in the heart for a moment to be unlimitedly painful. When the cowherd boys are with Krishna, with the cows, and there's thousands of cows, and unlimited cows practically. We'll hear later that the word used is asankhya, which means an uncountable number. Asankhya means to count. Asankhya means an uncountable number. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a definition to that uncountable number as 1 followed by 17 zeros. That's how many calves went with Krishna on this day. Unlimited cows, unlimited calves. Just imagine what it would take when the love, the quality of love that these residents of Vrindavan have, that when they're herding the cows, if Krishna would walk behind a tree and they wouldn't see him for one moment, it would be torture. And how the gopis would criticize Brahma for giving them the blinking, making eyes that blink so they couldn't see Krishna. So can we actually imagine this? No, we can't actually imagine it. But we should try to understand what it is like, what the spiritual world is made of, and why it is such ecstasy. Because the love is of this quality. Without love, well, then you're in the material world. And that's the curse of the material world is that it is loveless. And why is it loveless? Because we're envious of Krishna. And what is the result of our envy of Krishna? That we are placed in a situation where we have our own bubble of illusion, our consciousness in which we are imagining that we are the center of existence. And everyone has their own bubble, walking around with their own big bubble. I am the center of existence. No one is allowed in to our bubble of illusion, because it's my illusion, because I'm the center of it. And in your illusion, you're the center. In your illusion, you're the center. So as long as we have that false ego, we cannot enter. It is not that Krishna keeps us out of Vrindavan. It is this bubble of illusion that I am the center, that I don't want to be a servant, I want to be the master. Ishwaraham. Aham bhogi, siddaham balavan sukhi. This is why I'm in the material world. And Krishna, on the other hand, yeyitam mam prapadyante tamstitaiva bhajamyaham. As much as we want to be with him, he will. We used to hear when we first started chanting that if we take one step to Krishna, that he takes how many to us? 10, 100, 1,000. I've heard, yes, if you want him to take 1,000 and you really, he will take that. He will bring you there immediately. Kadvanga Maharaj surrendered to Krishna in a moment. But the problem is that we can't bluff Krishna. It is based on love. So Krishna called all the boys individually, as he would call the gopis by playing the flute, and they would know, oh, Krishna is calling me specifically. The flute sound would enter their ears and go right into their heart and pull them practically to Krishna. So the buffalo horn or the bugle would pull Krishna, would pull the cowherd boys who were just simply waiting. When can I see Krishna? When can I see Krishna? Because their love was always overflowing. So he woke all the cowherd boys and calves. So the calves were also just waiting, because they're in Vrindavan. And the forest of Vrindavan is also waiting. And the deer are waiting. And the trees of Vrindavan and the grass of Vrindavan is waiting. And in that waiting, there's one kind of ecstasy. When will Krishna come? And for the trees, when will I be able to make my offering of the shade, of the fruit, the peacocks? When will I be able to dance for Krishna and offer Krishna my peacock feathers? Why? For Krishna's pleasure. This is the pleasure of the soul. To give oneself, one's individuality, whatever one has, fully with love to Krishna. What one is, give that to Krishna. And all the variety of individual souls, even though Krishna is not lacking anything yet, with that variety it increases Krishna's ecstasy. Unlimitedly Krishna's ecstasy increases. How wonderful. So he called all the boys, then Krishna and the boys, and so Vrindavan Forest was waiting. The cowherd boys and the calves were waiting. And now it was the turn of Mother Yasoda to cry and wait. Oh, Krishna's leaving. When will he come back? Mother Yasoda, it's been 2 minutes since he's left. No, it's not time for him to come back yet. Is he coming back yet? We should send someone out. He must be so hungry. Every hour, Mother Yasoda, everyone would be cooking. But all of Vrindavan, the town of Vrindavan was just waiting. When will Krishna come back? And the cowherd boys were so happy. And the calves and the Vrindavan forest were so happy. And there were thousands, again, there were thousands and millions of calves. And they would all come out of the different boys' homes. And then they would go into one big group and go out. And then when they would return in the afternoon, then the group would break apart and they would go to their respective places. So then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective group of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. To Braja. And the word, it's Vinir Gato Vatsa Parat Saro Hari. So they kept their Vatsa means calf, Parat Sara, keeping the respect of the groups of calves in front. Vinir Gata, they came out of Vrindavan, the town of Vrindavan, or because they were in Vrindavan at that time, with Hari. Hari came out. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when describing the Atmarama verse to Sanatana Goswami, he defines there are unlimited meanings of the word Hari. But does anyone know how he gives two that are the ones that are most prominent? Does anyone remember what any of them are? Those two are. I also didn't know, but I looked it up. And Hari, he says it's Sarva Amangala Hari. Hari means he who takes away. Amangala means auspicious, inauspiciousness. So he who takes away everything inauspicious. And the other one is Prema Diya Hari. He is the one, Hari, he gives Prema. Takes away inauspiciousness, darkness, and gives Prema or love. Text 2. At that time, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi. How is it possible to there to be an unlimited number of cowherd boys, an unlimited number of calves? How is it possible? Because it's possible because reality, what we conceive of as reality, as Maharaj mentioned yesterday, with our dualistic logic, we cannot conceive reality in fact, because we are stuck in the bubble of our illusion. We perceive, even if there is an accident, everyone knows of this fact, if there is an accident and you ask, and two cars collide and you ask 15 people what happened to describe it, and they will come up, each one will come up with a different scenario of what happened. Because no one sees reality. And if there is a fight, it's always the other person's fault who's causing it. We see a little part of reality, a tiny, insignificant part of reality. And to think that tiny part is the whole thing, is all of reality, is illusion. So we, conceiving our tiny part as of perception as the totality of reality is illusion. Well, in fact, Krishna is the only one who understands reality. Consider this point, my dear devotees, when something happens to you and you say and think that it is bad and unfortunate. Consider that from Krishna's point of view, is it truly unfortunate? Is it truly fortunate? Practically speaking, we can't say, but because Krishna is Sarva Amangala Hari, takes away inauspiciousness, the devotees have faith that everything that happens is within His mercy, and it is for their benefit. And therefore, they can be free from anxiety. They alone can become free from anxiety in this world. If their faith and realization is deep enough to accept that, in fact, and Prabhupada explains this in the Bhagavad Gita in one of his purports, that in fact we are living in Krishna's mercy. This is the vision of a devotee. So how is it possible that unlimited calves and unlimited cows and unlimited gopas, and how is there room enough for all the devotees forevermore who want to go and join Krishna and Vrindavan? Not only is there unlimited, there's going to be more coming. How is it possible? Because reality is a servant of Krishna. It is meant to increase Krishna's pleasure. That is the definition of reality. There is time in the spiritual world, but there is not past, present, and future like in this world, where it forces so many undesirable things on us, whether we like it or not. But reality, time in the spirit, it serves Krishna. A night can go on forever practically. And there can be simultaneous different times going on in different places. It is wonderful. So at that time, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi and joined Krishna, keeping before them their hundreds and thousands of groups of calves. And the boys were very beautiful. They were very beautiful, as Krishna is so beautiful. Each of his associates has a body that's composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. And it is so beautiful and individual. And each boy was very beautiful. And they all had their lunch bags. Someone mentioned that. I didn't acknowledge it. What were the boys carrying? They carried their lunch, their food, lunch baskets, sticks, flutes. Their flutes would be tucked. They would wear belts of cloth. And they would put their flutes in there, and they would all play their flutes. And they would have their sticks for controlling the calves. And boys being boys, they were always laughing and playing and pushing each other. And just having a good time with no anxieties at all. And there wasn't a great anxiety about, how are we going to take care of the calves? And, we have an unlimited number of calves. What are we going to do? So hard to take care of one with 17, zero. What happens if we... No achinta. No anxiety at all. This is Vaikuntha. No anxieties at all. Everything is simply meant, not exactly even arranged by Krishna, but arranged by Krishna's Leela Shakti, and we'll hear about this later, just to increase the rasa and the ecstasies. Everything arranged. This is the spiritual world. Everything arranged for Krishna's pleasure, to increase Krishna's ecstasy. And what's Krishna's ecstasy? To increase the ecstasy of the devotees. And what's the devotees' ecstasy? To increase Krishna's ecstasy. And this way, because it's pure love, it's ever increasing. Anandam Bhudi Vardhanam. So the boys went out with Krishna. Krishna Vatsara Sankyatara Yuti Juti Kritya Savatsakan Charya Yanto Riba Lilabhya Virahus Tatra Tatraha. Along with the cowherd boys, who each had their own groups of calves, Krishna came. They each had an unlimited group of, all the unlimited boys had unlimited calves to take care of, and Krishna came out with his unlimited number of calves. Now try to put that onto your hard drive and figure out what it is. But it doesn't serve reality. God and what he does doesn't fit conveniently into our finite minds. What is the meaning of God then? He's infinite. Then all the boys, they all got together, and all the boys began to sport in the forest in a greatly playful spirit. Although all these boys, so the next verses start describing first how they looked, what they were wearing, and then how they were sporting. Although all these boys were already decorated by their mothers with ornaments of kacha, it doesn't describe what this kacha is. Maybe someone knows. Gunja. This is the season. Well, just actually a few weeks ago, there were gunja. You know what kacha is?
Kacha.
Oh. So the way that their dhotis were, it could be. And gunja, this is the season when the gunja vines give their gunja berries. And the little red with a black spot little berries, and then they're strung and make very wonderful necklaces that are the ornament in Braja. And they were wearing these kacha gunja berry necklaces, pearls and gold. And their mothers wanted them to go out looking so, so beautiful. This is the nature of the mothers. So they dressed them so carefully and put kajal in their eyes for their healthy eyes, which enhanced the beauty of the boys still further. They put, all the boys wore different types of crowns and jewels here and jewels there and ankle bells. And what were they made out of? They were made out of gold and jewels and pearls. These things are very auspicious. Plastic is not auspicious. It has a vibration that brings happiness, practically speaking, and it uplifts the consciousness, these natural ornamentations. But although the boys were wearing all this, and they were so beautiful already, soon as they got to the forest of Vrindavan, they further decorated themselves with green leaves, bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. They would paint each other. They would paint themselves. We see when you look at Krishna and Balaram and the deities, all the deities everywhere, but how they carefully paint with different colored minerals. And although the boys were already decorated so beautifully, until they had accepted the gifts that the forest of Vrindavan was offering, they didn't feel like they were fully decorated properly. So they would take the different minerals and paint on very, very, very softly and gently and delicately, like your Kanayalal. Just painted so in detail and so exquisitely. And all the boys, they would look, and who... of course, it's very hard to paint your own face, you know, and make it very, very beautiful. So all the boys would want to go to Krishna and put all the decorations on Krishna. And again, there were unlimited boys. So Krishna would expand himself, and every boy would think, oh, I can do better than that one. He only did it this way. Just like when one has one's own deities. The way that one dresses one's own deities... one does it in just the way, oh, I know how to dress these deities. And it brings such, there's a reciprocation between the deity and the bhakta, the devotee. And the devotee gives, or Krishna gives the devotee who's decorating the deity such happiness and intelligence and inspiration on just how to do it. And such happiness. That, oh, and Krishna is so kind. So for each coward boy who wanted to decorate him, he expanded himself. Otherwise, the whole day would have been spent just decorating Krishna. One, okay, next, take that. That boy didn't do very well. I'll do it. No. So in this way, and the minerals of Vrindavan, and they would take the fruits, and the trees were so happy they were giving to Krishna and the coward boys for their pleasure. The trees and the peacocks were dancing and dropping their feathers. And all the different seasons were presenting the gift of that season. And the peacock feathers were everywhere, and this feather and that feather, and the boys would take them, and they were pushing and playing with Krishna, the only lovable object. And how happy this is, we cannot say. But we can glimpse. So they began to decorate themselves with bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. The whole Vrindavan forest was making its offering. And when one makes one's offering of, like the peacock had his offering of the dancing and the peacock feathers. So one, and the gunja vine has its offering of the little gunja berries. And all year long, it grows and then it produces the little pod. And then at one particular time of the year, the gunja berries come. So how happy! And what is the meditation of the gunja vine the whole year? Just let me give this to Krishna. All year he's forming this this wonderful berry. So how did they play? They were decorated so wonderfully. Different colored cloth. Not everyone wearing black like the teenagers nowadays. But all different colors. Every color, bright colors. Bright colors, happy colors. And then one coward boy would steal another coward boy's lunch bag. He would be holding it on the end of his stick, maybe, and one of the boys would come over, take it. And then when he understood that his bag had been taken away, the other boys would throw it further away to a more distant place. And those standing there would throw it still further. So he would be running and running and running. And when the proprietor of the bag became disappointed because the boys were teasing him and bullying him so much, the other boys would laugh at him. And then the proprietor of the bag... And then when he would cry, all right, you're a crybaby. You take your bag back. Ah, the cry, and all the boys, crybaby. And they would tease him in this, and they would do this to Krishna. And Krishna would cry and threaten, I'm going to tell Mother Yasoda on you that you're teasing me. And the boys would, tell your mother, crybaby. How intimate. Can you do this to the king? Can a subject do this to the king? Walk in, he comes into the court, the guards are there with their spears and their guns. And he's there and he's holding the scepter of his ruling. And someone walks in and takes the scepter and says, I took your scepter. And immediately, it's off with his head because he hasn't showed the proper respect. Off with his head. But when he's at home, in his private quarters, his beloved children come and tease him. They ride on his back. Maybe he gets down on all fours and his child rides on his back. Walk faster. And in the court, he doesn't do that. No one can jump on his back. But which gives him more pleasure? Everyone coming to him and offering prayers, but actually in their hearts thinking, I'm praying to you, O Supreme Lord, O Powerful One, but in their heart thinking, please don't drop the piano on my head. Please make sure this business deal comes through. Please save this one. Please do this. Please do that for me, 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 me. And if he wasn't so all compassionate, he would get very, very tired of that. But that's not his real pleasure. His real pleasure is his enjoyment with those who love him, who he can trust fully, who don't want anything from him but want to see him happy. And then Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye, Sarupa Purnata. Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye, Sarupa Purnata. But Bhakta Vatsalya Parjanta Vadanyata. That Krishna gives himself to those who worship him in pure love. Unselfishly. He gives himself, and that's what Vrindavan is. So they're playing so intimately because they're trusted. Krishna can relax with them. Completely relax and be himself. Yes. And his self is over, that's what his self is. It's overflowing with the desire to bring ecstasy to these souls, these persons. That's what Krishna is. Most intimate and most difficult to understand. So, maybe, Adi, could you hand out that sheet now, the four, the sheets of four? So what the Bhagavatam does, after preparing us carefully with the first nine cantos, Sukadev Goswami, Srila Vyasadev, and Sutta Goswami, and Srila Prabhupada, and the Acharyas, after preparing our consciousness, leading us by the hand, leading us by the hand carefully into Vrindavan. Now, this particular sheet that you've just gotten, if you've just gotten it, has 24 verses on it. The first one, number one, is the one that's the next verse that we'll read right now. And there's some from some other chapters of the 10th canto as well. But the first verse is the one we're going to read now. Raise your hand if you don't have your sheet yet. Keep it up so the devotees distributing them can. Jagatwini Mataji needs one. Adi. So this first verse continues the same theme. I'll read the first two lines, or the first line, and then repeat after me. It breaks it right in half. Yadi duram gata Krishna. Vana shobekshanayatam. Aham purvam, aham purvam. Iti samsprishare mire. Yadi duram gata Krishna. Vana shobekshanayatam. Aham purvam, aham purvam. Iti samsprishyarimare. If, yadi, duram, dur, a distant place, gata, went, Krishna. So sometimes, Krishna would leave the cowherd boys amazingly enough, although they would be always trying to not let Krishna leave, Krishna would leave and go to a gata, dur. He would go to a dur, a far place. Vanashobha, Ikshanaya, for visiting. Ikshanaya means for seeing or enjoying the Vanashobha, the beauty of the forest. Because Vrindavan forest was always manifesting newer and newer, more amazing and beautiful things for Krishna to enjoy. Again, reality is serving Krishna's pleasure. And then when Krishna would be in a distant place, looking at something beautiful, then the boys, iti samspisha remare, or iti samspisha, they would run to Krishna to touch him, saying, aham purvam, aham purvam, I will be first to touch Krishna. I will be first to touch Krishna. And they would run to Krishna like this, with their arms spread out, to embrace Krishna. I will touch Krishna. I will embrace him first. And Krishna would put out his arms. And when one boy would come, he would embrace Krishna, and Krishna would embrace that boy. Intimate relationship with God, with the Param Ishwara. Embracing. And Krishna, because all the boys, the unlimited boys, would be running to Krishna. Krishna would become unlimited Krishnas to give everyone a very, very warm and tight embrace. What would it be like to embrace Krishna, whose body is all attractive? He is all attractive, who is all beautiful, who is all strong. His body is composed of Satchit Ananda. What would it be like to embrace Krishna? What are the qualifications required for someone to have such an intimate relationship that when he would run to Krishna like this, Krishna would embrace him tightly and hold him. You know, that wonderful and famous picture of Krishna embracing the cowherd boy from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. What's his name? Gop Kumar. Embracing him, our Sharma. The Biju Sharma was so inspired because there's such an intimate exchange of affection like that. And also interesting one, probably I think it was Sanatana Goswami, he describes it when Kaliya had Krishna so tightly in his coils and in his embrace. Krishna stayed in that embrace, although he's all powerful, he could have freed himself at any moment. He stayed for one muhurta, or 48 moments, minutes. And Sanatana Goswami, who was seeing it from a different level, he said, why did Krishna stay within the embrace of Kaliya for 48 minutes? Because when someone greets you with a warm embrace, it is not polite to break yourself free quickly. So Krishna accepted it, Sanatana Goswami, as the love, the loving embrace. So the cowherd boys were embracing Krishna. And Krishna was, if we embrace someone in this world that we love, there is so much happiness comes to the heart. What to speak of? What to speak of? Chandra Shaka Nyaya. What? Just imagine if embracing a beloved in this world brings some happiness and satisfaction to the heart. Just imagine what it would be like if one's heart was completely full of love for Krishna and embracing Krishna in that way. And Krishna, aham purvam, aham purvam, I want to touch Krishna. So the next set of verses, they're grouped in the Bhagavatam, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I'll just read the first four in English, and then separately we'll read the fifth, which is the 11th verse, which is a very important verse especially from the tattva point of view. So more of Krishna's pastimes, 7 through 10. All the boys would be differently engaged. Some boys blew their flutes, and others blew bugles made of horns. Others imitated the buzzing of the bumblebees. Is there a bumblebee buzzer around who knows how to do that one? Bzzz. So the boys in Vrindavan, I haven't seen very many, but I've seen some. There's these huge bumblebees, Brahmar, not the wasps. There's these golden wasps, and there's little honeybees, but there's these huge bumblebees. Has anyone ever seen a Vrindavan bumblebee? Raise your hand if you've seen. Yeah, they're very, very, very big. And black, very black. So the boys would bzzz and follow them around. Because the whole... Just listen for a second. Let's see what sounds we can hear. So the Vrindavan forest, those were what? What were they? Parrots, it sounded like, yes. So the whole Vrindavan forest was always full of wonderful sounds, not tractor sounds, and not big loud speakers blaring, and not banging and hammering, but wonderful spiritual natural sounds that make the atmosphere still more pleasing and still more soothing to enhance the love of Krishna and the experience of Krishna. So they were playing flutes and blowing on their horns. They imitating the buzzing of the bumblebees. Others imitated the voice of the cuckoos. Some imitated birds flying by running after the birds' shadows on the ground. They're boys, so they're playing like that. Some imitated the beautiful movements and attractive postures of the swans. Some sat down with the ducks. They're boys playing with their beloved. Sitting silently, others imitated the dancing of the peacocks. And there are other places in the Bhagavatam where it describes how Krishna would imitate the dancing of the peacocks. And the peacocks... everyone would acknowledge that Krishna's dancing was the best of all, almost the best of all. And sometimes there would be young baby monkeys, and they would pull their tails. I wouldn't advise you to try this with the current inhabitants of Vrindavan, those monkeys, because they can get quite heavy. But they would play with the monkeys. They would make monkey faces at the monkeys. They would pull their tails. They would climb into the trees. They would jump from branch to branch. All with Krishna. And some boys went to the waterfalls and crossed over the rivers. So everything was green and luxuriant. They would jump with the frogs. And when they saw their own reflections in the water, they would laugh. They would also condemn the sounds of their own echoes. So they would say, they would look at the water. Just imagine the scene. The beautiful boys, all decorated with gold and jewels, and the forest minerals, and Krishna there with a peacock feather on his head, decorated by all the most beautiful, effulgent, his garments like lightning. And the atmosphere so soothing, and there would be sounds of frogs and bumblebees and parrots and peacocks. And they would come to a waterfall with the beautiful sound of water falling, and boys wanting to play, and they would look in the pool of water that was very still, and they would see them, their own reflection, and they'd say, "Who are you?" And then they would hear an echo coming back. "Who are you? I asked you first. Who are you? I asked you first. Who are you? I'm Krishna. I'm Krishna."
Looks again.
Hey, looks like Krishna. "I am the son of Nanda Maharaj. I am the son of Nanda Maharaj." If you don't stop repeating back to me, I'm going to hit you. If you don't stop repeating back to me, I'm going to hit you. You have a lot of nerve. You have a lot of nerve. And Krishna will become angry at the reflection, and in the mood of the Leela, Krishna, who again is Sat Aishwarya Purna, and it is impossible for us to understand what it's like being God, obviously, being Krishna, but he would forget that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he would become Mugdata. He would forget it and he would become angry at his reflection. And the boys would say, oh, look, Krishna, he's angry. Don't get angry. Don't get angry. And they would tease him and he'd stop pushing me. So this relationship of Krishna and his friends, Krishna and his parents, Krishna and the gopis, Krishna and all the trees of Vrindavan, of Giriraj, this is something that's most extraordinary. Unlimitedly extraordinary. Now, in the 11th verse, which is verse number 2 on the sheet, let's say that and let's understand something from this. Please repeat after me. Itam satam brahmasukana bhutya. Dasyam gatanam paradaivatvena. Maya shritanam naraptarakena. Sakam vijarur kita punja punja. Itam satam brahmasukana bhutya. Dasam gatanam paradaivatvena. Maya sritananam naradarakena. Sakam vijarur kita punja punja. Now this verse offers some philosophy and a perspective at this point. That there are different kinds of spiritualists, there are different types of religionists, there are different type of worshippers. So itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya. There are those, the jnanis, who worship and desire. They worship Krishna, perhaps even, or Vishnu, but with the desire to merge into the effulgence of Krishna. Impersonalists, Mayavadis. So that's one type of a worshipper. So they have some relationship with the Absolute Truth. And then there's dasyam gatanam paradaivatvena. There are those worshippers of God, the typical religionists, who want to be the dasya, or the servant of the Lord. And then, so that's another type of a spiritualist, religionist. And then maya sritananam naradarakena. Then there are those who are covered by the Lord's illusory energy, and they think he is Nara Dharakena. They just see Krishna as an ordinary person. How could you worship someone who herds cows and walks around the land of Vrindavan without shoes? Ordinary person. But, Sakyam, the friends of Krishna, Sakyam Vicharu, Krita Punja Punja. What type of punya, pious activities, must these boys have done for countless lives? What have they done to have achieved such an intimate relationship with the Absolute Truth, with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Sukadev is speaking this to say how wonderfully incredible is the intimacy of these cowherd boys' relationship with Krishna. Unimaginable by the jnanis, the ecstasy that they are perceiving. The ecstasies. Neither the materialist who think Krishna is an ordinary person, nor the impersonalist, nor the ordinary devotees have any access into understanding what the intimacy that these residents of Vrindavan, the intimacy of their love, and how they are reciprocating with Krishna, and how that all-powerful Lord is reciprocating with them. And what did it take for them to gain this incredible position? In his commentary, we'll read what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about this verse. We'll read part of it. Although Krishna is made of complete bliss, he experienced ecstasy, intense ecstasy, playing with the Vrijbasis in various pastimes of love. They too attained the topmost position of joy in his association. Therefore, the Vrijbasis are more fortunate than all others. Of course, this is, you can't compare what the Vrijbasis are experiencing to anyone. For the Nitya Siddha Vrijbasis, the eternally liberated Vrijbasis, Krishna's eternal associates, who far, far, far surpass the jnanis and the ordinary dasya bhaktas, the ordinary servants of the Lord. The cause of their playing with Krishna is not material piety, because it's kritta punya punya. What piety have they done? The cause of their playing with Krishna, and of course this question is so relevant for us. What did they do to attain, to gain access into Krishna's lila? Because on one hand, we want to clean the heart. On the other hand, we want to be planted on our heart the desire to serve Krishna and to love Krishna as the Vrijbasis love Krishna. This is the gift of Mahaprabhu. So what they did to attain this is very relevant. Here the word punya can only mean activities pleasing to Krishna, not ordinary piety. But they perform lifetime after lifetime of activities pleasing for Krishna, by which, and listen to this, my dear devotees, by which Krishna came under their control. In other words, their love increased to such a degree that Krishna, who is the all-powerful, became controlled by that love. This has nothing to do, Vishwanath Chakravarti concludes, with anything material. Materially good deeds or offering material things to Krishna. It has to do with love only. The next verse, which is the next one on here, text 3, we won't read it. I'll read the English, and then to height and underline the fortune of the devotees who are playing with Krishna in this way, we'll understand how rare this type of braja bhakti is. Yogis may undergo severe austerities and penances for many births. We can understand for many, many, many births by practicing yam, niyam, asan, pranayam, none of which are easily performed. This takes such incredible mental control and austerity to bring the mind under control. Yogis may do that for countless births, yet in due course of time, when these yogis attain the perfection of controlling the mind, when they reach their perfection, they will be unable to taste even a particle of dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How fortunate these boys are, not only touching or tasting the dust of his feet, they're exchanging embraces with him. They're pushing him. They're making him cry and teasing him. How intimate. And the yogis have not access to the slightest glimpse of anything to do with this. But we haven't answered the question of how to attain it. But that will come. What then can we describe about the great fortune of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, Vrindavan, with whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally lived and who saw the Lord face to face? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment here is not long, but you've all been sitting very patiently to a very long talk. So I'll ask you to, but it's so important, I'd like you to listen carefully, despite the austerities that you're performing. Please listen. What to speak of playing with Krishna, even establishing a relationship with Krishna, is very rare. That is the intent of this verse. The yogis cannot attain even one particle of dust of Krishna's feet, parapamsu from the verse, nor can the yogis attain one particle of reflected light from the trees of Vrindavan. They cannot even attain a particle of the reflected light. This is how far they are away from Braja, from the trees of Vrindavan, the effulgence of the trees of Vrindavan, the reflection of that, what to speak of that effulgence they cannot attain. Those who fully concentrate their minds cannot attain Krishna. Thus was stated earlier that Krishna's sukhapa, not easily attained. Svayam Stita indicates that seeing Krishna does not even depend on the performance of sadhana. It does not even depend on the performance of sadhana, the practices. What does this mean? What does it depend on? After we have our break, we will start a look at what it does depend on. We have some very interesting commentaries and quotations on what it takes. Oh, what great fortune, Dishtamita. Oh, what a happy festival. Who can describe the good fortune or happiness of the Brijbasis who see Krishna constantly? Such fortune is unobtainable by the yogis. Though they concentrate their minds for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, sinning, yam niyam, everything, asan, pranayam, pratyahara, dhyan, dharan, dharan, dhyan, samadhi, they cannot even get even the slightest bit close. They cannot even attain a particle of dust from Krishna's lotus feet. So why don't we take, now it's 11:15, practical probably to come and we'll continue this tract. How to attain it is the question. How to get close. How to enter. How to become the kind of devotee that we want to become, a devotee that loves Krishna. So that will be the subject of the second half of the talk. Now it's, according to my watch, it's 11:15 exactly. At 11:30, please come and we'll begin immediately at that time. Balo Giriraj Maharaj Ki! Yeah!